And if you could just tell me your name, please.
I'm Georgianne Gowan. I'm Don and Eleanor Gowan's daughter-in-law.
Wow. So can you just tell me who they are?
They were the owners of the Village store from, and you are going to have to help me on this, the dates.
So I think it was 19, it was in the late 40s, early 50s until the 1983.
Okay. And I was lucky enough to marry their oldest son and only son.
So tell me about your husband.
Well, I met my husband on a blind date at the University of North Carolina. I was at William & Mary at the time and went to visit a friend, and she set me up on a blind date, which I was not happy about because every other blind date I'd been on did not go well. Either I was disappointed, or much more likely, the date was disappointed.
Right.
And I'd never really had a successful blind date, so I wasn't wild about this idea of going on a blind date. And I walked down stairs in the Tri-Delt house, and here was Don standing, and it was literally love at first sight. And I thought surely it would not go well because he was there on a Moorhead scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
He was probably the first and maybe the only person to walk on to the UNC basketball team. And when his coach from Kent School used to tell a wonderful story about him, that he'd been a good player at Kent School, where he attended high school,
mm-hmm.
and was a very good athlete, but he had to work hard at it. It wasn't necessarily that he was a natural talent. He worked hard.
Okay.
And when he went off to UNC, he called his coach from Kent School and said, "Coach, I've decided to try out for the UNC basketball team." And the coach told us, actually, as a part of his eulogy when my husband died, he said, "When Don said he was going to try for the UNC team, I nearly fainted because nobody walks on to the UNC team." And my husband said, no, I've heard the coach really likes people who are fit. And so he, I think, just worked out and worked out and worked out, kind of pulled a Rocky routine,
mm-hmm.
and amazingly made the team. So here I was on this blind date with a man who walked onto the UNC basketball team. He just played his freshman year. He was the fraternity president. He was a Moorhead scholar. He was incredibly good looking and nice to boot. And I thought, okay, we had a ball, but I thought I'll never hear from him again. And sure enough, the next day he called, and evidently the love was mutual, and we got married. That was March 29th, so the anniversary is coming up, 1969. We married the next year as soon as we graduated, and lived happily at Kent School until he died of a heart attack in 2008.
So how did you, you came back up here to go to, so he could work at Kent School?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. This was the year of the 1970 was the year of that first draft lottery.
Okay.
During the Vietnam War. And he got a safe number. It was 230 something.
Mm-hmm.
So we were fairly sure that he was not going to get drafted and go to Vietnam. But at that point in the history of the Vietnam War, people were just going and getting slaughtered. The numbers were getting called up. And so it was obviously on every young man's mind.
Right.
So he went to Kent School, where he had attended, to talk to some of the teachers there and say, "What do you think I should do? I'm a history major. I don't really know what to do. I'm kind of waiting to see if I'm going to get drafted or not."
Mm-hmm.
And they knew a good thing when they saw it, and they said, "Well, why don't you just sign the dotted line and work here?" And he did. And I don't think he had intended necessarily to have a career in teaching, but he turned out to be really good at it.
Oh, wow.
And he was the dean of students at Kent School and coached three varsity sports, football, basketball, and lacrosse. He actually started lacrosse there and ended up being the chairman of the history department as well. So he was he was known as Mr. Kent, and a beloved teacher and coach for 38 years. So that was our first job. Mm-hmm. We graduated from college. He started in September of 1970 when we had graduated, and I joined him in December of that year, as a new bride, right. And we never left. It was a wonderful way. It was a wonderful life, a wonderful way to raise children.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband had no commute. They always knew where their father was. They could,
right.
When they were little, they could toddle up to his office, which was just feet from our dorm apartment. And then after work would toddle down to whatever he was coaching.
So what was it like being, like, joining this community that your husband had been part of previously, yeah. That's so much like a small town?
Right.
I mean,
it was. He went from small town to small town.
Right.
And actually, he chose to go to UNC rather than Dartmouth because he wanted something really different,
okay.
From Bridgewater.
Yeah.
He wanted something big and southern. He wanted to learn what grits were. He wanted to, you know, he wanted to meet people cut from different cloth,
yeah.
Who spoke differently. But then he ended up coming back to Kent, which in many ways is very much similar to Bridgewater. A lot of families that have been there a long time.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the Kent school community itself was ever-changing because you have students from all over the world.
Right.
All of the United States and all over the world. And I have to tell you, I loved it. I'm a little bit embarrassed to admit this, but I wanted to be Donna Reed, and I got to be Donna Reed. I married the love of my life. I got to support him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an artist, so I was able to do my art when I didn't need to be baking cookies for the students, or wanted
right,
to.
Right.
Or raising children. When somebody was out of diapers, I'd do some freelance artwork. But my main goal was supporting Don. And it sounds very old-fashioned today. And but I got to, it was the dream job for me. It was, and I had dream in-laws. Eleanor and Don could not have been more supportive. Unfortunately, I never knew my father-in-law, who I think was often called Pop. I never knew him until after he'd had a stroke.
Okay.
And he could walk, but he was fairly handicapped. And so Eleanor was running the store.
Mm-hmm.
And then Don Sr., Pop, died right before I got pregnant with the child that would become Donald III.
Okay. Now, you talk about all these great qualities that your husband had, mm-hmm. this perseverance, this intelligence, this kindness, a great teacher. Do you link any of these back to sort of Eleanor?
Oh, totally. Absolutely. I completely. Dude, I'll give you a perfect example. One of the first times I came up to visit Don, it was probably the first Christmas holiday that we knew each other. And I came up to visit. I lived in Virginia at the time. And I believe it was either New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, when, not that my family was big on celebrating New Year's, but we usually had some kind, we used to have balloons or party hats or something. And I went down into the store with his entire family, and we did inventory. And I can remember counting cans of Campbell's cream of mushroom soup,
right.
Because that was what you did. It was mm-hmm. one for all and all for one. And Don, I know, painted the village store I don't know how many times in the that was part of his summer job.
Right.
And Eleanor and Don were just, they were just good people. They were very community-minded. They were very neighborly. I know there were times when the phone would ring and somebody would say, Eleanor's, the baby's sick, can you, I need some baby aspirin or whatever it would be, or some milk.
Right.
Would you mind just sticking it out on the porch? And she would go down into the, because they lived right above,
right.
As you know. And she'd run downstairs and put out the bag and then write on a scrap of paper, so-and-so owes 39 cents for this, and she'd throw it in a cigar box. And their billing, that's what their charge system was, just scraps of paper in a cigar box. And I think they might have had dividers by the alphabetical, but I'm not even sure they did that.
Right.
And sometimes, I remember husband Don said that sometime the payment was in kind, or what mm-hmm. we call it, if somebody couldn't pay their bill, they might show up with, say, a chicken from their farm.
Right.
Or egg. You know, it was so beautifully pure and old-fashioned and just good.
Right.
And Don's sisters very much have the same quality. They're just good, genuinely caring people. They're never, there's no ever keeping track of, well, I did this, so they owe me one.
Right.
None of that. It was just, it's the right thing to do. I consider Don 100% the product of his parents. One, just absolutely.
Do you, so I don't know how much about this, you know, but Anne, Eleanor's daughter, alluded that, so Eleanor apparently had sort of a tumultuous childhood, and coming to Bridgewater gave her this stability.
Yes, yes.
I think in something I wrote, I said that it's sort of appropriate that she came up here to visit family because she ended up being surrounded by family for the rest of her life.
Yes.
Can you speak to that at all?
Well, all I know is that Eleanor's father died when she was quite young.
Mm-hmm.
And she and her mother, I think, were a bit rootless and kind of had to go where people could take them in.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, and I'm sorry that I cannot remember Don's grandmother's name, but Eleanor's mother, the name will come to me in a minute, lived with them.
Oh, okay.
In the store.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Or maybe before they lived in the store, they also lived in a house, and maybe Anne told you, somewhere else in Bridgewater.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, but we'll have to check on.
Yeah.
It's a road. I can probably even show you where it is. But
okay.
Annie could tell you, before they actually owned the store. I think once they owned the store, they moved in above. But didn't they bought it from a cousin? I believe.
Yes, from the Warners.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So, that may be absolutely true. I hadn't really ever thought about what Anne said, but family was absolutely so important to Eleanor, and it was the way I was brought up.
Right.
Also, my father lived with me the last 6 years of his life, I've often said to my daughter, you know, if something happens to me, you just put me in a home. I'm good. I'm good at crafts. I'll run the crafts. You know, you can just put, it'll be fine. And she's like, no, that's not what we do. That's
right.
Not what we do in the Gowan family or the DeVelbis family. That was my maiden name. Family was all important to them, but also the extended family. And I think for Eleanor and Pop, the community was their extended family. For my husband, because of that example that his family set, the students were the extended family, and it was always very important to us, specifically my husband, and I was happy to do this, that our door was always open, and we had an 8-foot-long dining room table. Anybody was welcome there anytime, most Friday nights, we either had an open house for everybody in our dorm, or when Don became the dean of all the students and we lived in a fairly big house on campus, every Friday night, anybody on the entire campus was invited. We wouldn't have 300 kids, but maybe 90 would come.
Yeah.
And I would just serve them hot dogs or baked potatoes with the toppings or something. And some would watch sports on TV. I think a lot of them it was a way of feeling like going home, the ones that were far away. And now, my daughter, who has Kingsley Tavern, she had several aims in having this restaurant. One was to honor her late brother's wish that she have a restaurant. Number two was she wanted to have really good food, like her grandmother, Eleanor, had produced. And the third one, she wanted it to be a place where people, whether they were in overalls or whether they were in tuxedos, were welcome. Like, everybody was welcome.
Right.
Because that's how that's what she remembers from her grandmother.
Right.
And that's what she remembers from growing up with us, the open door policy.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. That's so special.
I think it sounds a little maybe romantic and overdone, but that's exactly. I wish that you could interview my daughter as well, because those memories are so pure, but she may not be able to even know what what it is that, how Eleanor influenced her, although certainly her love of cooking and baking
was a big baker. Oh, I mean, I knew she was a big baker, but.
And a wonderful cook. She wasn't a fancy cook, but everything she cooked was perfect. It might be simply meatloaf, but it was the best meatloaf of all time. And certainly her pie was she was a particularly good baker. And I remember getting her recipes, and mine never came out the way hers did. So I asked her if I could watch her. And what I noticed, I, of course, mother of three and then mother to all these hundreds of boys that were always drifting through our house, I was usually kind of in a hurry. So when I'd go roll out some pastry, for example, I'd be kind of, you know, hammering out the dough, really pounding on it. And so it got tough, of course. And I watched Eleanor one day, and when she had the rolling pin, her pinkies were up in the air like you can picture somebody who drinking from a teacup.
Wow.
And she was so gentle, as if, and I'm absolutely convinced that was the secret to her pie crust, which is what makes her pies so extraordinary. Well, there were many things, but her crust was just melt in your mouth. And it dawned on me that, and her, you know, it was her attitude. She was loving and gentle, and there was nothing rammy about her. Mm-hmm. I tended to get rammy. I was like, hurry. So,
how did, I have a couple of questions I want to ask. Did she originally intend on keeping the store after Don passed away?
Yes.
Goal?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think his first stroke came when they were young. He was only in his 50s when he had his first stroke.
Okay.
So my husband was, I believe, a senior, a sixth former Kent School.
Okay.
When his father had the first stroke. And then, So I'm going to say he lived maybe 5-6 years after that fairly debilitating stroke. And then the second stroke killed him. Oh. But he wasn't even 60 yet.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he was young. So I'm guessing that the first stroke, that it probably was something that never came up. The same way when my husband had a heart attack at 60. It was just not something I'd ever thought about.
Right.
Am I going to stay in Kent? Because I was only 60.
Yeah.
And I think for Eleanor, it was probably the same thing, but it was her life. I can't imagine Eleanor doing anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I really can't imagine.
Well, do you think it was hard for her not to be political or anything, as a woman to run a store at that point in time?
I don't really think it was.
Okay.
But that's just, you know, we never talked about it.
Right.
Because she, and by the time I met her, and Don had, my father-in-law had the stroke, she was in essence running it.
Right.
And I think she was, even if there should have been some feeling that, well, she's only a woman, you know, how could a woman, she was so beloved, I think, that it would never cross anybody, like gender, I don't think ever would have even crossed anybody's mind.
My feeling is it didn't matter. I just was
curious. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just my.
Yeah.
I'd never really thought about it because she was the village store.
Right.
And that, what one of my great memories about Eleanor, and there is the pictures out there, are the people sitting around at 10 o'clock.
The Grapefruit Club, right?
Yeah. I didn't know that it was called the Grapefruit Club.
I don't know if it was. I know there was there was a group of guys who called themselves the Grapefruit Club.
Interesting. Well, it probably was, but basically it was just everybody, the town crew, minister from the Congregational Church, the priest from the Episcopal Church, I don't know who else, just a group of guys, Frank Coburn, I think he was the town foreman maybe, and at 10 o'clock, I remember she had an old Revere Ware coffee pot, like a percolator, and she would brew, it was big, it must have made 20 cups of coffee, and of course the kitchen was right above that roll-top desk, and she would percolate that coffee at 10 o'clock, and she'd come down 6 days a week or at least 5 days a week. I mean, they were open 6 days, and I guess they did it 6 days a week. And then she'd come down with homemade something, homemade coffee cake, homemade cinnamon buns, homemade whatever, and it was all free.
Right.
There was no charge. You just came and chewed the fat.
Wow.
It was just such a – when – you know, I – I don't know if I told you or just Russell, that when I met my husband, and it was clear I was in love with him, and someday I wanted to know where he was from and that sort of thing.
Were you from up here? Or
no, I was actually a Texan by birth. My father was in the military, and I was living in Virginia at the time.
Okay.
My father was stationed outside of Washington, D.C. And I can remember, I'd never been to New England, although we had lived in California, New Jersey, Texas. We were always going back and forth across the country, usually by way of Texas, because that's where I was from and all my relatives are from. But I'd never been to New England that I could remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my brother maybe had come to Lake Winnipesaukee or something, but I'd never been there. And Don said, "Oh, I'm from Connecticut." I had no idea what Connecticut was like. But in my mind, I pictured exactly what the Village Store was. I pictured Norman Rockwell, and that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
A Norman Rockwell painting. It was. These men sitting around on feed sacks having coffee and charge at Eleanor and flannel shirts lots of community spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And
how is their community spirit? I'm going to push on that. How?
Oh, how?
Yeah.
For me, the perfect embodiment of that would be the Bridgewater Fair.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody works at that. As far as I know, I don't even know how they have any customers.
I know.
Because, like, everybody works there.
The town shuts down.
Yes. Yes. And, I mean, that to me is the perfect thing. And also just, I mean, the people went to church then.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there was, I don't know that much about St. Mark's other than Eleanor, I know, sang there. And and I think of somebody else you need to. Have you talked to the Stuhlmans yet?
No.
Hester and Byron Stuhlman were the Episcopal, he was the Episcopal priest many of the years that Eleanor and Pop were here. I can give you their contact information.
Okay, perfect.
They would have wonderful stories.
Awesome.
When the community spirit had to do with, first of all, like the fire department, you can't have a volunteer fire department in a little town like this unless you've got community spirit,
because
everybody's a volunteer. And to support the fire department, you have that. And I'm assuming, because Eleanor and Pop were the only people I really knew here. I mean, I knew Mrs. Von Agati because of her, and I knew Marion Carlson who worked. But so my view is through Eleanor's eyes, and she herself was so charitable that I'm guessing I'm seeing Bridgewater through her, I saw from her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd never lived here, and so maybe I...
But I think that's perfect, because I think that's perfect for what we're doing. So that's fine.
It just seemed to me that if anybody needed you, here's a perfect example. When Pop had his stroke, and so this would have been, I think, 65, 66.
Okay.
My husband, Don, had worked for Walt Von Agati, who raised Swiss Chalet. I think he had, I can't think of what that road is. I think it might be the road that Russell lives on.
Yes.
And my husband, are we running out of
time? No, you're fine.
So my husband, Don, had worked from the time, I believe, he was like in second grade. Because he was 6'3", and I think he was probably that age by the time he was in about sixth grade. That size.
Right.
When we got married, he wore the same shoes he graduated from eighth grade in. I know that. He grew big and stopped. And when he went to when he was a second former, which was eighth grade at at Kent School, the grade photo, everybody's this little kid, and then there's my husband, who's probably already shaving, who was 6'3".
Right.
And then all these other little boys. But anyway, starting when he was in about second grade, he worked for Walt Von Agati. I think just mucking stalls and doing whatever you do on a farm.
Right.
He loved it. Don, if he had had the money to be a farmer, because as you know, you can't be a farmer. If you don't inherit the land, you have to have a lot of money to start a farm. I think that would have been something he would love the most, to have been a farmer. And so Walter and May knew the Gowan family, because of course it's a small town, everybody knows everybody. And when Don had his stroke, I remember that they told me that Walt Von Agati put air conditioning in the part where they lived upstairs in the living quarters. Because you can imagine the heat up in that tower.
Yeah.
Over the store. First of all, heat rises and everything. Yeah. And it was, that was one of my, the first things I think I learned about Bridgewater was, oh yeah, Walt put that in for, I thought, what, who does that?
Right. Yeah.
It was just such a touching thing.
It's Bridgewater.
And my husband actually, the part of the, one of the many things that blew my mind the night I met him. So he came to pick me up at the sorority house, and we went out, and he was in a navy blue 67 Mustang. And I'm like, come, be still my heart. And he started saving for that car in second grade when he worked for Walt Vonnegutty and put all the money aside. And I think a 67 Mustang, I'm sure it was under $3,000. Right. I don't remember what it'd be easy to look up.
Yeah.
But wow. So he bought that car from money he made from Walt Vonnegutty.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Do you have any pictures of it?
I might be able to find one. I'll get back to you on that, Chris. I know I have one picture of me bringing Donnie, my son, home in it from the hospital. I don't know how much of the car is in it, but I'll look through it. I probably can find that. Yeah.
What was your first memory of Eleanor?
Oh, well, actually, it's kind of a funny one.
Okay.
Really.
We like funny.
It was kind of a funny one. It was the first time I came up to visit the Gowans.
Mm-hmm.
And I, of course, I wanted so badly to make a good impression because I knew I was madly in love with Don and I was going to try and marry him come hell or high water. So, of course, I wanted to make a good impression on Eleanor. And there, I, for whatever reason, I think I may be allergic, but for whatever reason, I absolutely despise fish. And I hate fish. And so the first night here, what did she have but a big fish, right? And it was had the head on it with the eyeballs and everything. And so as if it, you know, the fish wasn't hard enough to eat anyway. But I ate a little bit of it, right? And so I was, I think I just feigned that I really wasn't hungry.
Right.
And, you know, and so I ate the starch and the, you know, whatever the vegetable would have been. And the next night, I was really good and hungry. And I could smell something that just smelled delightful. Mm-hmm. And clearly, Eleanor was a superb cook because the smells that came out of her kitchen were just divine. And I'm sure the first breakfast, I know it was homemade bread. And I think she probably churned the butter. Mm-hmm. I know she made the jelly. Everything was homemade. But we got to the second dinner, and I was pretty good and hungry because I hadn't eaten the fish before, the night before,
right,
having feigned no hunger. And I saw this pot on the stove, and it was kind of whap, whap, whapping, you know, the way you do when something's simmering. And I said, oh, you know, and I kind of lifted the lid, and here was a cow tongue. And I'd never eaten tongue.
Right.
But have you ever seen a cow tongue?
I have.
It just looks like a tongue.
It looks like a tongue.
It just looks like a tongue. It's got taste buds on it and everything. And I ate it. I mean, I ate it, but I was just like, I am going to starve to death. Of course, you know, she was a fabulous. And what I'm reflecting on has nothing to do with Eleanor. It has to do with mine.
Right, great.
I was raised in Texas where you eat pork, beef, or chicken.
Mm-hmm.
The only way you ate chicken was deep fried, so you couldn't even see it was an animal.
Right.
And you just cooked the living daylights out of pork. You know, it would be, I mean, well, eat, no matter what it was, you cooked it, you barbecued it or something. It wasn't identifiable as this is a piece of an animal, right? I mean, of course, I knew it was an animal, but to see this tongue wagging in there,
gosh.
And I have to say, it was delicious.
Right.
But just, and I can remember Don saying, oh, we've eaten all kinds of stuff because, first of all, they lived through depression like everybody else, you know? And sometimes people would pay them in animals.
Right,
that
right.
They had caught. That you might not necessarily want to eat, but they did. So I guess my first impression of Eleanor was, number one, what an exquisite cook, even though I happened to not like what she cooked that first day. Unbelievable baking. But just her, there was, I don't even know how to describe it. She wasn't ever, none of them ever tried to impress anybody.
Mm-hmm.
They were who they were. They were loving. There was nothing artificial about them at all. They were the pure human beings, just pure.
Right.
They, and that's not the, that's really not the right word, I don't think. But when she cooked, it was, this is my, this is, I'm doing this because I love you, and this is my best effort to keep you fed. She would, I'm sure when she chose her menu, it was never like, ooh, I wonder how I can impress this woman that my husband may be in love with or not. It was none of that. It's that it's time to eat, and here's my best effort, and here it is. And they had a simplicity. It's interesting because part of the Kent School, I guess you call it motto, is simplicity of life.
Mm-hmm.
They were the personification of that, simplicity of life. Simplicity of life, directness of purpose, and I'm going to get in trouble for not remembering the third thing. But those, it's interesting that those are Kent School parts of the motto. Why can't I think of this one, the other one? That's absolutely them. Simplicity of life and directness of purpose. Absolutely them.
How did your husband end up at Kent School?
Oh, this is good. Interesting. Eleanor and Don did not want their son to be a shopkeeper. They were doing it because it's kind of what fell into their lap, and they loved it, and they were good at it. But I think they wanted more for him
mm-hmm.
than being a shopkeeper. And he was the oldest, so he was the one, and he was the boy.
Mm-hmm.
So he was the one that was going to get the education. And Eleanor had a sister who was 10 years older, who was married to Duncan Norton Taylor, who was he was the editor, I believe, of Fortune magazine. And he said, I really think you should send Donnie to a private school.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, I think maybe would have been the gunnery.
Okay.
And then one of them was Kent. He, of course, researched the ones that were good. And so it was through Duncan Norton Taylor, who was Eleanor's brother-in-law, who said, you really need to do this. And Eleanor said that they, every night, would take $50 or whatever amount. I don't know how much it was, $20.
Right.
Out of the till every night and to pay for his tuition. And then the beautiful reward for this, because they really had to struggle to pay a private school tuition, that he ended up getting a Moorhead Scholarship, which is a full scholarship at UNC. It not only your education, it was tuition, room and board, books.
Wow.
It was everything. And he was the first Moorhead Scholar from Kent School. So it was kind of this.
That's beautiful.
Great, because they had sacrificed so much to get him there.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, they couldn't afford two more sacrifices.
Right.
And then I think there may have been a little bit of the gender stereotype then.
But that's amazing.
Isn't it?
That's truly beautiful.
Yeah. They were just awesome. One of my biggest regrets is I never knew Pop.
Right.
Really, I mean, I knew him, but.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Not as who Don knew. Although, I will say the highest compliment, the moment I thought, hey, maybe I can get this guy to marry me, was the first time I came up to see him. So we met the end of March in 1969, and I think I went up that summer to see him, and he kept saying, my dad is going to love you. And I thought, there's hope. And it's interesting because even he wasn't in any way mentally disabled mm-hmm. or anything, but he was severely handicapped. And as you know, strokes change people, because
right.
he had been, like my husband, very strong and capable and just able to do anything. And then to have to depend on Eleanor for a lot of things, I think, had to be really hard.
I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But they were just, I don't have enough nice things to say about them. I mean, there's never been a luckier daughter-in-law than I was. And she not only was a wonderful mother-in-law, but a fabulous grandmother. And my children were her only grandchildren, because Anne and Maggie didn't have children.
Right.
She was the kind, Chris, she could carry a purse no bigger than this. And I swear she could have like a six-pack of soda, a Monopoly game, Band-Aids, peroxide. I mean, what could come out of her bag? No matter
right.
what you needed.
Right.
It was in there. And I asked my daughter, who would be my late son, of course. I never thought to ask him about his memories of Eleanor. And my youngest son is too young to remember her.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize there's a third.
Yeah. So okay. I have a son in California. I mean, he remembers Eleanor, but he doesn't remember the store.
Right.
So I asked my daughter, who has Kingsley in town, I said, so what do you remember about the store? And she said, well, the biggest thing about Bridgewater is the fair, mm-hmm. by far. She said, but the store, the two things were the smell. She said, and I can't even describe it, slightly sweet. And I think what she was smelling, you're not old enough to remember, Chris, but when we had Five and Dimes when I was growing up, Woolworths, and there was a Five and Dime in New Milford.
Hearts.
Yes.
Yeah.
You could walk in there blindfolded, and you would know I'm in a Five and Dime. I'm not in a hardware store. And my daughter remembers a unique smell associated with the store and the penny candy case.
Right.
And I remember the penny candy case. It was every child's dream. And,
right.
And my husband used to say that one of the things he loved about having his parents have the store, he never resented the fact that he was expected to work a lot.
Right.
He remembered that he could take the kids over after school and get a pop.
Right.
Or get penny candy. And it was that old-fashioned penny candy that you can't find anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was in a big, long case with a sliding door in the back, and there were these glass trays, and one would have, like, Mary Janes and maybe those caramels or whatever. I don't remember what all they were.
Yeah.
But that's what my daughter remembers about. Wow. About the store.
It's funny how those things sort of stick with us.
Yeah.
It really is. So what was Eleanor's retirement like?
Well, of course, she continued to be sort of the town historian.
Mm-hmm.
And she stayed in Bridgewater.
She was the town historian?
Well, I mean.
Unofficially.
Yeah,
okay.
Unofficially. Yeah. It seemed like she was forever clipping things and putting them in notebooks.
It's amazing. We are so blessed to have her scrapbooks.
Isn't that the truth? Right?
So blessed.
Yeah. She was just forever collecting things. And, of course, sang in the choir, was involved in making jam, spent a lot of time making jam for the booth, the St. Mark's booth at the Bridgewater Fair.
Okay.
And that was, I believe, a year-long project. They would meet in the parish house at St. Mark's, and they would make hundreds of jars. And she, being the old-fashioned good cook that she was, they'd do marmalade. If somebody gave them kumquats, they'd probably make something out of kumquats.
Right.
But a lot of it was just, okay, who can we get to do this? And her life was volunteering. And she would help babysit for me.
Right.
Sometime I'd bring the kids over. And, of course, they loved to go to Eleanor's house because she had the magic pocketbook for one thing.
and grandmother to people in town, too, from what
Sandy
yes. Neary was telling me. That.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. She and I believe Mia Farrow wanted her to, like, be a nanny or something,
really?
And Eleanor declined.
Right.
But she was everybody's grandmother, everybody's friend. She was a hospice she was a hospice volunteer.
Wow.
And was a natural at that. Anything, I honestly can't tell you how she spent her days other than busy.
And helping others.
Yes, and helping others. I don't remember. She was an avid reader and writer.
Mm-hmm.
I have so many beautiful cards that she, to my children, even that had, like, savings bonds, she always wrote in them. And when it's fun, my youngest son just had his 37th birthday, and he's out in California, and I just mailed to him the Bible that Eleanor gave to him when he was christened.
Right.
And my son's name is Andrew, and she had inscribed in the Bible who Andrew, the biblical Andrew, was. And then a personal note from
That's
her.
That's beautiful.
But she was just, she was a woman of deep faith.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that Pop was a churchgoer.
Okay.
Not that he wasn't. I mean, I don't think
right.
it was a statement, but
yeah.
Eleanor really was.
Yeah.
And I'm quite sure she assisted in the communions and things like that. I know she sang in the choir and just was, she was a kind, good person.
So are there any stories or anything else you'd like to share about Eleanor or about the store or about your life or about your husband?
Boy. Well,
or we can, you can come back. We can talk again.
Why don't we come back? I mean, I'm sure I'll think of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
As time goes on, but I think I kind of hit the highlights, I think, right now. But
okay, so we'll stop here.
Okay,
and
great.
We'll say there'll
thank
be a part
you, Chris.
Two. Thank you so much. I really
thank
appreciate
you, Chris.
It. I'm going to stop recording.
You
thank you.
Because you made it just a conversation.